Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the Mission Impossible franchise, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
I'm Pete.
I'm Doug.
Ray.
Doug Ray.
What's up, Doug Ray?
Pete and Doug Ray are back. What's up, guys? Pete and Doug Ray sounds like a show, like a radio show in the South.
Does.
Someone call Alan Sanders about this.
Hi, Pete Doug Ray, I got a problem here.
Hey, this is Pete Doug Ray and the Mooch.
The Mooch, exactly. Pete Doug Ray and the Mooch.
Gotta do the horn sounds.
We're drive time radio. Honk honk. Well, Doug's back from the Rocky Minute. Pete's back from the probably the podcast with the best theme song.
Oh yeah,
best
we do have a really
best theme song. Second is not us; it's Tombstone, and Tombstone Minute, and third is us. So, because one is so good, Indiana Jones Minute's podcast. I remember the day that you changed it because I was walking to work. I was walking to work, and I remember just going, "What am I listening?" And I just went, is that Tom Servo? And I was like, oh my God, they got him to do a song for them. Somehow they know somebody that knows somebody, and they got him. I was like, holy crap, this podcast just became amazing. Yours is like high production, and then Tombstone Minutes is so low production.
Oh yeah, that's the charm of Tombstone.
And that's what's so great about it. There's a happiness in between those two. And that's us. We're in the middle. We have production. Happiness. But like not the great, you know, like where it, Scott Tofty made an amazing theme song for us, but you guys did it first. So putting words to the wordless is the key to this kind of stuff. To a sound like a sound alike.
Yeah. Yeah.
To where you won't get sued.
Tofty nailed your intro though.
He did. Oh, he did. Job. Didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. He really did.
Yeah.
Kudos.
I can't even hear the real, when I hear the real theme song in the movie, when I watch it, I'm like, that's not right. That's not our song. Cause ours is just a little different. The guys over at Light the Fuse had the same thing. They have they had a friend do one for them, and it sounds like Fallout.
Yeah. Theirs sounds pretty close to like Fallout. I mean,
joke, it is legally different enough.
Yeah.
Legally dissimilar enough. It's really fun. So Sound Alikes is awesome. Welcome back, guys. We're at minute 97. Minute 97 begins with Ethan making friends with the dove and ends with a grenade and a gut punch.
As all minutes end.
We've had a lot. We've been in fist fights for the past, not fist fights, but this is the beginning of fist fights.
Mm-hmm.
I keep forgetting we've recorded some of these out of order. We're at the beginning of fisticuffs in this movie that we haven't seen. Last week we got to see, Ethan take down a few people. So we're getting weird punches and flips.
As the weeks have gone by since last week to this week, it's been like, we're getting into that big time John Woo finale now. So
the finale that's going to last the next 20
half
minutes. It's too long. It's easily 10 minutes too long, but that's cool. I'm cool with it. This begins with Ethan is hiding from Stamp and the Ambrose up in the rafters, and there's one white dove.
Only one.
When I saw this dove, the first thing I thought was, I bet this dove did this on purpose because Ethan just murdered half his family when he exploded that door.
Yeah.
And all those doves were there.
Yeah.
So he's like, like he looked at him, like he looked straight. He actually kind of looks at him like,
yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to flap away too.
What does that dove speak for?
You're going down.
Yeah.
You're going down.
You're going down, little man.
Did you ask yourself, are there wild doves in Australia? Anyone?
No, I did not, Doug. Are there?
There are five species of doves that are native to Australia, but none of them are pure white.
Hmm. Oh. They're called didgeridoo doves.
Didgeridoo.
Right. That's the sound they make. They sound like Burgess Meredith from the old Batman cartoon. comic book, TV show.
Did you guys determine what this building was or is?
Yes, it is the slab. Oh, in the script, it's called the slab house.
Why is it like an old penal colony?
It is not. It is a fort. It is a fort that kept Botany Bay from being attacked by the Russians.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Obviously, the stuff they're shooting inside in all these hallways, this is the actual place. At first, we thought it was a set, but we were like, you know what? This is a really big real concrete building with mm-hmm. lots of weird, dirty nooks and crannies. We're like, I don't think they built this. Mm-hmm. I think he just brought in a team of lighting guys and they found the best places to shoot. And because if you notice in the room where they're doing the transfer, the almighty transfer, it's pretty low rent. It's got like a crappy table. Like, because this is a old, you know, unused fort.
There was an old time prison that was on Botany Bay.
Mm-hmm. That's where it comes. That's where the Botany Bay from Star Trek 2 comes from.
Is that, mm-hmm. is this, it can't be the same building though, right?
No, though. This was to protect Botany Bay. Botany Bay is a giant bay in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like on the tip of it to keep people out of it.
Is this like the, no, so it's not an island?
It's an, yeah, it's an island that's so close that maybe you see the, you don't remember, but next week there's a bridge.
Right, okay.
And that bridge gets blown up with a rocket launcher, but that the bridge is like maybe 100 yards long, okay. maybe. So it is an island in that it is not connected, but it is right there.
But this is like at the entrance where the fort was supposed to hold Botany Bay invasion.
Yes, this was basically a deterrent.
Okay. I like that.
To the Russians, which I didn't know was a thing.
Yeah, I didn't know. Botany Bay was also the first penal colony, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, all right.
I think later on it became that. I don't know the whole Botany Bay. We didn't go into much of the Botany Bay stuff in the episodes, but we can always put in the IMF things about Botany Bay.
Yeah.
Pete, you're the historian, buddy.
Yeah.
That's on you. Go for it.
All right. I'll get to work.
Let's talk about this move that Tom Cruise is doing. I don't think I have the core strength. Let's talk to Doug. Doug's a ripped gentleman. Do you have the core strength to hold on to what I assume he's just holding on to that bar and pushing with his body to hold himself up?
Yeah, it appears that way. Maybe his feet are against the wall.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's a no. That's a no. It's more than core because you need like upper body strength too. Because his arms are out in front of his body.
Right. He would just be planking basically, but with his hands and his feet are the things that are holding him up.
Yeah.
Like the tension between them.
But the regular plank, your hands are usually below your shoulders.
Right.
His are extended out in front of his head.
Which makes me wonder if his legs are hooked around another bar behind him, which seems like it would be easier to have like your feet, like you're hooked.
Yeah. Instead of pushing against the wall.
Yeah.
But still, yowza.
But the move he does seems like he's just holding himself. Because when he comes out at such a crazy angle that he actually falls on his own back.
Yeah.
Not the coolest move. I thought this was going to be a cool move. And then rewatching, I'm like, he kind of bites it. He hits stamp as he's, because the dove has, of course, given away his position,
mm-hmm.
as doves are wont to do. They're a mean bird. Mean, filthy bird. And I guess Stamp's men are just gone. They've run off.
They left him.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Where okay? Where did they go? And when do you think they figure out that he's not with them?
The men are clearing out the next classroom.
Yeah. How far away are they?
Yeah. This is a problem because they left a team member behind. You never leave a team member behind.
Nope.
But what if the team member that's left behind is the leader, and you're following his orders and you take off running, and then he just never shows up? You just assume, oh, he got it.
No. Yeah, because those guys don't show up. It's not like they come back in later minutes. It's not like they show up behind. I can't remember. We're going to spoil later minutes. When he drags Ethan, in quotes, back in, is his team with him?
No, where the hell are the other guys?
I think they're gone. I think they just left.
Yeah. That's why I'm not a cop, because I would be that team. Like, as soon as the leader's gone, I'm like, I'm out of here.
Ah, hell, we lost Mummert again.
Like, Stamp gave him the go signal, and they're just going.
Yeah.
They're just running.
Super
easy. You see them running down the down that bridge we were talking about?
Yeah.
They're just running off the island. You're like
golden retrievers.
He told us to go. We're going.
Golden retrievers.
Big, beautiful idiots.
The Ambrose.
That may be, I'm trying to think now. We see the Ambrose again because they all get murdered later in later minutes, but we're starting to lose Ambrose quickly.
Yeah.
We get down to a much smaller group pretty quick.
To death or just running away?
They're running to the cars because later on they're in the cars and they're the ones chasing Ethan when he's on a motorcycle. Just wait, guys. You don't have those minutes, but they're going to be on motorcycles here in a second. I know it has nothing to do with the plot and they're underground right now, but in less than 5 minutes, they will be on motorcycles.
I mean, it's an action movie. You need motorcycles.
But those motorcycles literally fall from the sky.
Yeah.
To ride.
Yeah.
Literally.
It has nothing to do with the plot. Just like, oh, they're now motorcycles here.
But are these guys like, because don't we see later that the Tom Cruise's cousin, the tech bro guy, is going to be a driver, also like a high performance driver? So are these Ambrose guys also like, are they running to check the transfer too?
Yes. Everybody is a multi-talent.
Yeah. You know? Everyone's
to be an Ambro. You can't just be an Ambro.
You have to be initiated in.
Yeah.
Yep. You got to learn hand signals. You got to learn the Doug Greenberg hand signals. There's a whole, it's
like
whole
the
thing.
It's like the Navy SEALs.
The choreography to West Side Story.
You got to learn choreography. You know, learn how to enter a room, how to share the scene with somebody, how to cheat the stage so you're not.
How to hit your mark.
How to hit your mark. Gotta hit your mark.
Gotta hit the mark.
And wear leather.
I found something, interesting, question mark, about.
That's this movie. Interesting question mark is the literally one word description of this movie. You're like, interesting? Like if I looked at Pete right now and said, if Pete had his camera on and wasn't being a jerk and not showing us his face, he would be looking at me going, Jonathan, how's this movie? Interesting.
With that face.
They're like, no, I don't know.
Hands up in a Stamp's gun, this Vector CP1 that I found on.
Someone else went to the internet and moved a firearms database.
You goddamn right I did. So you mentioned last minute that Stamp's character is supposed to be from South Africa?
Yes.
Vector is a South African firearms company. It has ties to the South African military.
It is. Mm-hmm. I think we brought it up on either an episode we've already done or an episode we're about to do. So, yes, I'm just going to say yes. Okay. I'm both agreeing and saying we already did it because I don't know where it is. I don't know where we are. We've recorded some out of order, guys, so I apologize. So,
yeah, we did definitely talk
said
about it,
I said that I was a nice attention to detail that they used a South African gun. And I was wondering, I think I actually said this in the thing, if he based his character being – because Chris said, God, I don't know, the first 2 weeks that – Roxbury likes doing a voice for his characters every movie, like hits his thing. And I'm wondering if maybe when they gave him the gun and they kind of told him where it was going to be from, like they kind of, here's your gun. Oh, what kind of gun? Because a character actor would ask you, what kind of gun am I using?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, it's a Vector. It's from South Africa. He's like, I could be South African.
I think it's the other way around. I think he was written South, or he was told he was going to do it South African. And then he chose the gun because it was South African.
You think he was told, or you think he said, "Hey Pete, hey Robert, I'm going to come in and do it South African."
I think he was either told by the script or by John Woo, because like I said in a couple minutes that we did a couple weeks ago, that Woo had a Arnold Vosloo play a South African, I think he might be actually, but he was South African in Hard Target, and had almost the exact same gun, the same sort of. He was a henchman, had the same issues. So
I like that we are so bad at this that you're having to remind me of things you've said on past podcasts. Yeah.
Can we change that from interesting question mark to interesting exclamation point?
Ah, even better.
We can.
Yeah.
Because that was interesting.
Well, you just found the name of this episode.
Interesting exclamation part?
It's interesting question mark exclamation point.
Slash. Like face off. Question mark slash exclamation point.
But see, I think this whole scene is part of one of the reasons I had trouble with this movie. Is I did not once watching this movie think that Tom Cruise was in any kind of danger or anything bad was going to happen to him. Mm-hmm. And when he's up here and he does this kick, like he times this kick perfectly. Like this is amazing. Like how he hears a footstep, but he triangulates. He's like, okay, that's 3.2 feet away. If I start my swing now, I'll kick him right as the gun comes up. And his timing's perfect, like it is in every single, like, you know, double arm shot as he's flipping backwards and everything. And it's hard for me because it just seems like he's Superman.
Yeah. Do you think when he times it, do you think he uses it and he does the calculations in his head, he uses his actual height or his height that's listed on Wikipedia?
Or his height when he's wearing the disguise.
Well, we know from earlier and or later, we know from some episodes that he is wearing lifts.
Yes.
No. Yeah.
His shoes have little heels on them.
Yeah.
Little cha-cha heels because he's a little man. So.
Yeah.
It's the.
So that's basically what hit Stamp in the face is a heel. It's a 9-inch man heel.
So he was. He, it didn't matter if he timed it because with those like 2-foot heels.
He's like, he's let's got see, him. I'm 5'2", but the shoes are 6'3", so this should all work out.
He's got the Al Pacino lifts.
He does. Hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah.
It sounds familiar. Hey, that guy sounds familiar. What is that guy? You don't know him, Brian. Go back to sleep. All right. Gotta go. Hoo-ah. Gotta go. I had to say gotta go because I know Doug loves that.
I love it.
So right I mean, here- he had to say that. I didn't say anything. I was sitting here drinking my drink.
Like a ventriloquist dummy.
Is huge? Is his intention to take Ethan
Did you
alive?
Just call him huge? I think he just called him huge.
Is huge. Is his intention to take Ethan alive?
That's a great question at one of my notes. Huh. So it gets to stay in the podcast. Okay. It doesn't get edited out. I don't remember Ambrose saying, bring him back dead or alive.
No, he said, run that bastard down.
He said, run that bastard down.
Dune.
Dune. Dune.
That bastard Dune.
Dune.
For I am Doug Ray Scott. Three first names. All of them rather lame. You're right. Very white collar.
Hold on, are you saying Doug is lame?
Yes.
Damn it.
You fight, spice it fight, up with the green fight, you spice fight, it up fight. With the green burr because I thought you were part of the tribe with me, but you're not. So
in a roundabout way I am.
Yeah. You're kind of Jewish. You're Jewish? Question mark?
I'm Jewish.
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point.
Jew dash ish. Exclamation point. Yeah, I don't know. He didn't say that he was had to bring him back. So when he's like, he's got gun pointed at him, I'm like, shoot him right now.
Shoot them both.
Why is he not shooting him? And he's like, show me your hands. I'm like, no, that always means you have a grenade. That is movie code for I have a grenade.
Is it?
Yes.
Not
if you ever tell someone to show their hands and their hands are behind their back, Doug, just FYI for your work. They have a grenade, and you need to blast them in the face as fast as possible.
I tell people that all the time.
That's why you keep blown up.
Son of a bitch.
That's just your kids. You're just trying to keep them from playing grab ass. You're just like, show me your hands. Be quiet.
You know, it's not just any grenade, though. It's an M26 hand grenade.
Ooh. Is it? It's a real thing?
Yeah, heck yeah. These things, Pete, were developed right after World War II. Before that, they had the old pineapple grenades.
Yeah.
That the parts of the casing would blow off, and that was a shrapnel that would hurt people.
Uh-huh.
But what they did now is they enclosed the steel outer shell with notched wire or like buckshot to serve as the shrapnel.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And they were far more lethal than the old pineapple grenades.
Wow, even though it seems a lot smaller.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home, I am so happy when I hear the Doug Greenberg is reading voice. It's one of my favorite voices in podcasts because his whole cadence completely changes. Like, you know, Pete, the M316 grenade is no longer the pineapple. It turns into the Doug Greenberg is reading voice, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love that voice.
You just want to curl up and go to sleep.
Oh, it's so soothing. You're like the ASMR of New Jersey.
Go to sleep with that. I also read for those apps where you're supposed to get put to sleep, those soothing apps.
Uh-huh.
So, download Doug Ray's Green Doug Ray's Sleep
what
app.
Are you reading? What are you reading in one of your books, Doug?
The Rocky III novel.
Oh, I know one person that's not going to listen to that, and that's your co-host. Yeah, but right. I know I would listen to it. You know how much you guys, I mean, Doug, you know how much it physically pains me that we do not have a book for this movie.
I know. I was actually waiting for it and waiting and waiting.
Your movies are so old that they have, you're easily going to get 4 books out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
We only had one book before 2000. After 2000, it was like, nobody wants to read books anymore about the novelization of a movie.
They still make novelizations of movies.
They do, but they don't do it of Mission Impossible anymore.
Not a single
I tried.
One.
Not a single one.
That'd be a hard book to write.
Yeah, the other one. Pete basically was a guy who decided I'm going to make it super sexy, and he like perverted up the like a normal screenplay. It's amazing.
That was amazing.
And it's like fan fiction slash fiction along with the movie, and it was awesome. And they just it's so bad. I'm so sad. Also, I don't get to play that music anymore. That music cue.
You can write your own fan fiction. Ooh, your own novelization.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not
how Jonathan wished it were.
Oh yeah, here's how I wish it was. Put on Reddit.
I know this needs to be much more sexy.
What?
This movie? Yeah.
I mean, the only girl in the movie doesn't have a bra on the whole movie. That's about as sexy as it's going
to
get.
Who said it has to involve a girl? Doug,
you're right.
Doug Ray has plenty of sexual tension.
Doug Ray is wearing he is living up to his Doug Ray name because he's wearing a fully denim suit that we saw last week. It's fully denim, and his tie is denim too. It's amazing.
That takes some confidence.
Yeah.
It does. We've talked about the brashness of that as he's getting dressed and Stamp like walks in. He's like, you're really going to wear that? I'm wearing the whole thing, tie and all. He's like, I think you're supposed to separate it out into three different outfits.
It's a celebration outfit.
It is. I'm about to make a ton of money. I like that. I do agree that the fight scene, I don't understand why it's happening. And it's also, you know, no one feels like Ethan Hunt's in danger. But I do like the fact that they cut it on an like him wrestling with Stamp. And then there's an explosion. And then it's just like, or not an explosion, but there's just like we don't know what's going to happen. It's about to explode, and it explodes, and then cut with them up against the wall.
It's actually a good way for the minute to end.
Well, right before that happens, how does Stamp not hear that pin coming out of the grenade? Like, it's a loud. Is he just listening for birds? Because it's a really loud click.
He had to know he had him. That's when you shoot him in the leg. Shoot him in the leg.
Yeah.
And then, or maybe throw his body on top of the grenade. I don't know. I don't know what you do in that case. Doug, you know a lot about grenades.
Yeah.
Does that grenade have the power? Like, how is that a confined grenade? Like, you know, like some grenades like have a very large explosion. Does this one have, like, would this kill them from as far away as it's thrown? Or is that just a diversion that Ethan's doing?
I think
because he throws it far away from him.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. With the blast, that shrapnel will travel. So unless they're behind a wall or something, I think it would hurt them.
Which they are. They are when it goes off.
Yeah.
They're also behind a wall.
Confined concrete bunker. Like all that.
Of all the places I'm going to throw a grenade, it's going to be inside of a concrete bunker.
Probably the sound of the explosion would deafen them at the very least.
So bad.
I like when he lets go of that, like the safety clip, it pops off like that.
Yeah. The tink.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell one story and then we can go to tech of the app. My grandfather was in World War II and when they did training with grenades, he said it was the scariest thing ever because they had the pineapple ones and they would pull the pin and they said there's nothing scarier than when you pull the pin and accidentally as you pull the pin, the thing that keeps it from going off, the handle falls off with it and you're just like, I have a grenade in my hand.
You're holding a live grenade.
Because normally what you do is when you throw it and as in the air is when that thing pops off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they would have that happen and they had all these different trenches. You were basically in a trench throwing it. And what you do is if you've messed up, you would jump into another trench.
Mm.
Nightmare. Yeah. I can't even imagine practicing with hand grenades.
Nah, I wouldn't want to imagine that. That's awful.
What I don't know is, are those things like ignited by pressure or time?
Well, the trigger is probably a fuse.
Okay.
Like so something.
Time probably.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how new ones work.
All right, that's a good question. One I don't know the answer to.
Guys, I want you to show me your hands as we go into Tick of the Ip. I don't know why Doug Ray was there. My South African's not good, so I don't really do it that much. It's very subtle. It always turns into Scottish. Always. Every time. Okay, we're in Tech of the App. Here we are.
Uh-huh.
Pete's like, uh-huh. you're a good podcasting guest. You just go along with the bit. You're like, yep, we're here.
I was over there now before, and now I'm here.
Tech of the App, Chris. Let's start with you. This was a minute with a lot less tech.
I'm gonna go with the grenade. That's awesome.
I'm going with the grenade. That's awesome.
Yeah. I ain't gonna argue with it. The grenade's awesome.
No, it is good.
Yeah.
And also, I like how it's lit. It's very cool. We call that the hero light. Anytime that anyone's under the great colored light, the great shaped light that looks like a thing above them. Obviously, that's a lighting fixture they've put in that has a, you know, a gel on it that makes that shape looks like grating from top. But it's called that the hero light. So it looks really cool. I agree. Good to see a nice shot of his tactical gloves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He was using in some of the other minutes to actually type on a computer. So I'm pretty impressed by these gloves. They're really thick. Yeah. They're really thick, but he's able to use them. Doug, what about you?
I want to go with this. I was going to take the grenade, but the little area where he pulls the grenade from.
That's his bottom.
So he pulls the grenade directly from his ass.
Yeah, he's keeping it in his prison wallet.
Holding it, it looks like he takes it from the small of his back, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got this lump just in the small of his back. So, I mean, if he's sitting anywhere, that thing's lodged up against his spine. It can't be comfortable. But somehow he maneuvers with it and he's able to plank with it. But, you know, like whatever pouch or compartment he took this grenade from, that's my techity up.
Chris, add this to the cool things from this tiny backpack, because we've got three things so far that we know are in this tiny backpack. We did not add grenades yet, so add grenades to the list. All right, there it is. It's on the list. Pete, what about you?
I'm gonna go with the front of the tiny backpack.
The front pack, that's
the,
Ethan,
the straps,
yeah.
The front of a backpack is the person.
Well, if you go in front of the person, you got the straps. Yeah. Because I've had a couple of fitness trackers that have like the fasteners where you've just got a little dot that goes through the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And these do that too. But in the fitness tracker, it never stays on. And so they've developed some kind of amazing new tech here where you just punch the little thing through the hole and the backpack stays on.
You're right.
Yeah, it's not buckle. It's like fast. Like he could get it off fast if he needed to. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it holds it on the whole time. Anyway.
And he can adjust it. Like when his back pouch runs out, he can make it a little tighter.
Nice.
Yes.
On the run. Yeah.
Good call, Pete.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Doug Ray.
God, the mutual appreciation in this episode is making me sick to my stomach.
It's not your regular George and Rob episode. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And we're not tearing each other apart. You guys just build each other up, and it's disgusting.
What about positivity here?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of positively, I am positively picking that dove who narcs on Ethan as my tech of the app. That SOB almost ruins the whole mission.
With a simple flap of his wings.
Yep. Simple coup and a flap of his wings and his dirty, filthy wings. He almost ruins the whole thing. Luckily, Ethan had the American Anthem style gymnastics. That's a good reference.
Oh, yeah. That's an old reference. Yeah. American Anthem.
He's got a Mitch Gaylord style. He doesn't land like Mitch Gaylord, that's for sure. He lands on his ass. So, he almost blows up with those grenades when he lands on his back.
Oh, my God. All right. Yeah, that's he lands right on that grenade.
I wish when he had fallen, he goes, my grenades. So Stamp's known the whole time he has grenades. Oh, you have grenades in there.
So let me ask you a question. What would happen if Stamp just passed him by and didn't notice that he was in there? Does he
He would have gone for the – he's still going for the Chimera, so I think he would have just –
go to the
Go to the room.
Okay.
Yeah. Because in there, all he has to do is shoot Ambrose or detain him in some way, and everybody else is useless.
Right.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh.
I think he would have jumped down and followed after Stamp.
Yeah?
Because you don't have a Stamp mask in your backpack if you're not going to use it.
No, that is true.
Good point. Yeah,
that's very true.
Did that he have – okay. We can start talking about that now, because everything else in this scene is going to happen off screen. He has a mask already prepared. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
A great observation, Pete. Good observation.
Now that we've seen how the masks are made, yeah, he's got a mask in there.
We will continue this tomorrow, because we are definitely going to talk about this mask, but I wanted to ask, you know, okay, so we all think it's made already. All right, good. We will move into tomorrow's episode and we'll talk about this mask, because it's happening off screen. This is one of the first times this has happened where we don't – actually, it's the second time this has happened where someone has put on a mask and we don't know they're not who they – we think they are. So we'll come back for minute 98 with Pete and Doug tomorrow. Always find us at minuteimpossible.com, or you can go to the Apple podcast or whatever they're called now and download us. We have two whole seasons. I'm sure you all know that by now. And until tomorrow, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I've been Pete.
And I've been Doug. This minute will self-destruct.
See you next time on the show. It's done. It was so fun. Thanks for listening to Minute Impossible. Impossible. Minute Impossible. Minute Impossible. Minute Impossible.
They're in Australia, not Canada.
It's a Canadian tuxedo.
That's right. Thanks for the pity laugh on that.
There it is again.
Yeah. It's turning into a real laugh, though, because...